So before I get into the matter at hand, any questions? Any questions about the meditation today? Any questions about anything that I might have talked about so far? Anybody have any questions? Anything not clear? Okay. So one of the things that was mentioned in the announcements was that I'll be doing a transmission ceremony on a Sunday in March. And even though on a monthly basis, we recite the five mindfulness trainings. Does that sound right? On a monthly basis, we do? Yeah. It's just a recitation, but we don't talk about them a lot, but they really are the basis of a spiritual life. Actually, in the Buddhist tradition, in terms of Buddhist training, there are three aspects. One is called sila, one is called samadhi, and one is called vipassana, you know, or kind of maybe ethics, morality, right action, meditation, and insight, wisdom. These are the kind of three aspects of our training. So like when we were training in meditation, which is a certain aspect. Perhaps we were cultivating wisdom in our meditation. But to be on a spiritual path, to be on any kind of transformative path, we are basically transforming, changing, kind of how we are. I mean, is that right? And really how we are as human beings is expressed through the actions of our body, the actions of our speech, and the actions of our mind. Now, the actions of our body and speech are more physical. They're more outward. They are the ones that are seen, right? So how do we know each other? We know each other through our bodies, and we know each other through the actions, the things we do or don't do with our physical bodies, and we primarily use speech, right, to connect with each other. The mind, thoughts, feelings, perceptions, while they're certainly definitely in the driver's seat of the actions of our body and the actions of our speech, they are invisible. It is through the actions of our body and speech that sort of the content of our mind is expressed. And that's positively and negatively. The transformation of our mind, if anybody's been working at this for a while, takes time. Because we know that, like if you sit in meditation, did you choose every thought you had? Did you choose everything that might have come up to your mind as something to be thought about or paid attention to? No, it has its life of its own. And that life has causes that can go way back. For many people, their current emotional life has antecedents that go back decades, right? You know, so much of the way we are, personality and all these things, right, go back decades. Depending on how many decades you have, we could add more decades, which also means they're stronger. So spiritual practice is really about transforming our life. And how do we transform our life? We transform our life by the actions of our body, speech, and mind. Because the actions of our body and our speech are more observable, are more the way we interact with the world, and in a certain way are more controllable, right? Like I can have an impulse to do something with my body, but my mind can tell me, don't do it, not wholesome, not helpful, right? Or do this, hope, you know, this is good, right? Same way with my speech. I can feel like saying something to somebody, but my mind can tell me what? Don't say it, right? Because bad results, right? So our capacity to make significant changes in the way we interact to the world is much more readily available to us, right, when we learn to have more discipline in terms of our actions, of our body, and our speech, while we're working on our minds, which may take longer. Is that clear? Right. There's even in this world, there's the statement of fake it until you make it. Anybody ever hear that? Yeah. Which has a certain wisdom to it. Right? Yeah. Right? Yeah. We can know the right way to act. We can know the right way to speak or not to act or not to speak, but we're not there yet, are we? That it flows naturally. Okay, but we know that's really the better way to be. So we can act that way, talk that way, that means like fake it, until it actually becomes real for us. Is that clear? So don't feel like you're a phony, right? If outwardly you're speaking in a kind, civil way to somebody, but inside, you know. All right? No, that's good. We're making progress. Okay? Because if we said what we're hearing inside ourselves, we'd only be creating what? Suffering for ourselves, suffering for other, or as we say, more bad karma. So part of what we're doing is we want to clear up our karma. And the simplest, you know, in the beginning, the simplest way is to clear up the actions of our body and speech. Okay? Knowing this, going back to the time of the Buddha, when the Buddha first began teaching, he promulgated something that he called the five precepts. Very simple, right? Which became sort of the ethical right action guidance for his followers. You know, anybody can follow them. But traditionally, for somebody who wanted to formally commit themselves to the Buddha's way, you know, it would be the five trainings. Thich Nhat Hanh calls them trainings rather than precepts, and I'll explain why, is done ceremonially, as well as the three refuges, which we can talk about. So I wanted to begin today to talk a bit about these five trainings because they are so essential. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh wrote a book, one of his earlier books, on the five precepts, which he called trainings. Parenthetically, he called them trainings because they're not moral commandments. You know, you know what a commandment is? It's like, come from on high, you do this, you do this, don't do this, don't do this. They're sort of absolute with penalties, if you grew up in that tradition, you know, penalties if you break them. But he said they're trainings. They're something we're training in, which gives a sense of, you know, they're disciplines. They're something you're working with. And they're something that over time you can get better and better at. Right, and rather than calling them precepts, he called them the five mindfulness trainings. The idea being that one, to practice them, one had to be mindful. You know, many people are not mindful, not present to the actions, let's say, of their body and their speech. You know, they will say, gee, I don't know why I did that. Right? That wasn't good. I don't know why. People go, I don't even know why I'm eating this. Right? That's not good. Or, you know, that wasn't the right thing to say. You know what I mean? Like, we know it. But the problem is, at the time, there's no mindfulness. Our mindfulness, for many people, is afterwards. You know, afterwards, we are very wise. Have you noticed that? Like, yeah, I really shouldn't have eaten that. Right, you know? Right? You see how wise we are afterwards? Yeah, I really shouldn't have said that. That was really not good. Or, I really should have done that, you see. I really should have eaten that, or I really should have, that would have been kinder. I really should have said that. See, so we're very wise afterwards. But I would say, I'd give you credit for that. Okay? Because we're learning. Because there might have been a time in our life when we had no wisdom. And we just kind of, you know, did all these things and had the consequences of them without any kind of self-awareness or mindfulness. So the fact that we are getting it afterwards is good. But, you know, we like to kind of walk it back a few steps, you know. So actually at the time, we're aware, we're mindful of what we're doing. And even better, we get to a point where we are able to act in a way. So these five mindfulness trainings will be transmitted formally for those who want to receive them in March. And there'll be a class that everybody will go to. So. And the class is open to anyone, so you don't have to necessarily commit to taking them. They're a way to learn more about it. But I wanted to talk about them for everybody, because I think they're so important. So when Thich Nhat Hanh, decades and decades ago, wrote a book on the five trainings, he called it, For a Future to be Possible. Really, really quite extraordinary. He looked at the world, and he saw the way the world was going, the way people were interacting, what was happening. And he really felt that sort of a fundamental right action, ethical, kind of humanistic process. If everyone could sort of buy into them, a good future for humanity, the earth, would be possible. But if they didn't, that may not happen. Right? So he called it For a Future to be Possible. So even though we're talking about these trainings in terms of us as individuals, you know, the world is made up of individuals. Right? And depending where these individuals are in the realm of influencing and power, they are affecting the lives of many, many, many. So it really are the same. So let me give you a flavor. And let me just also say that most people know who Thich Nhat Hanh is? Yeah, so, you know, a modern Buddhist teacher, a modernizer, a reformer, also very creative, a writer. So he is taking what traditionally in Buddhism were very simple, almost one-line precepts, and he's given them more complexity in terms of how they mean, what they mean. And actually, the version I'm reading from is not the latest, because every time they get revised, they get more complex. But you can go online and find probably the latest version. So this is the first mindfulness training. Aware of the suffering caused by the destruction of life, I am committed to cultivating compassion and learning ways to protect the lives of people, animals, plants, and minerals. I am determined not to kill, not to let others kill, and not to support any act of killing in the world, in my thinking, and in my way of life. So when we think about the world, and a lot of times we learn about the world by accessing the news, right? We know what we read about every day. Do we read about people going out of their way to protect life? We read about every day people going out of the way to protect the earth, protect the resources of the earth. No. Aware of the suffering caused by the destruction of life. See, this is what's so important, because there is endless destruction of life going on in this world, and who's ever doing it is what? Is justifying it. Is that not true? Most people, most nations, most groups don't harm heedlessly. They always have a rationale, don't they? They always have a justification. And in the world of rationales and justifications, there can be endless worlds of rationale and justification. Is that not true? If you look at the thousands of years of human history, the human beings have done harm to each other. Don't they always have a reason? Always have a reason. But going back to the Buddha, he said, you know, if there's one thing that every human being values the most, is their own life, right? Anybody ever go fishing? When that fish is hooked, does it just kind of swim along and come up? No. It fights for its life. Right? So even very simple animals fight for their life, right? They want to live. Just the nature of everything. Human beings want to live. Is that true? I mean, see how simple it is? Of course, yeah. Our life is the most precious thing that we have. Life is the most precious thing. You know, so the idea of aware of the suffering caused by the destruction of life, I am committed to cultivating compassion and learning ways to protect the lives. So in the original precept, it just says, do not kill, protect all life. But Thich Nhat Hanh, he embroiders that. And he brings in the word compassion. Compassion means, in Buddhism, you know, to be present to the suffering of another being and to want to end their suffering. So it goes beyond empathy, right? It's that connecting with, but also wanting to ease. In a world devoid of compassion for the suffering of others, in a world that will only extend its compassion to those we like, or those we agree with, or those who share our same political views, or social views, or historical views, or religious, you know, if it's always on a case-by-case basis, that's not true compassion. Right? True compassion is open. To anywhere and everywhere acknowledging the taking of life, the harming of life, is causing suffering to someone. And that someone happens to be, this is really a hard one, somebody just like me. Who wants to live? Everybody is somebody's child. somebody's sister, somebody's brother, somebody's cousin, have children? Does a parent want any harm to come to their children? Take a guess. Does a parent want any harm to come to their child? No, we don't even think about it. Do you want any harm to come to your friends? No. You see, I mean, that is the natural heart of a human being. To do harm, we have to let go of our empathy and our compassion and our understanding. It's a process we go through. Or it's because of certain views or ideas we're unwilling to extend our compassion. I am committed to cultivating compassion and learning ways to protect the lives of people, animals, and plants. Well, we live in a world where there's lots of opportunity, isn't there, for us to learn about ways. And again, if you think about it, this, what unites all the five Buddhist trainings is this idea of do no harm. That's if you could distill the basis of all the Buddhist morality ethics is do no harm. Or do the least harm. Because sometimes actions may appear harmful. Right. Do the least harm. But never have the intention of doing harm. Right? So we want to do no harm, but we also want to protect people, the world, nature, animals, from others doing harm to them. So this training also has a protective quality to it. We want to protect life. We want to nurture life. I am determined not to kill, not to let others kill, not to support any act of killing in the world, in my thinking and in my way of life. Some of this is within our capacity, right? I can decide, I'm going to do my best not to take life. But of course, not to take life is also has to do with my actions, right? Because I may be consuming things that have incorporated taking lives. So I can choose whether I want to participate in that taking of life. Not to let others kill, that's a little harder, isn't it? You know, how do you stop others from killing? I mean, I don't want to say too much because I think these are trainings. And trainings are mirrors in which we can see ourselves and ask ourselves questions. What would that mean? If I really wanted a world where people really didn't want to harm life, the same way I don't want to harm life, the same way people don't want harm done to them or their families or their loved ones, same, protect life. How would I do that? How do I stop others from killing? What does it mean not to support any act of killing in the world in my thinking and in my way of life? So, these are not easy questions, are they? But most harm begins in the mind. People think it first. When we've thought the possibility that doing harm is okay, we have then opened the door to it occurring, haven't we? Yeah. So it's very important that we come back and go, all right, where can I begin with this? What can I do about my own life, my own consumption patterns, my own, you know, I guess in a certain way, politics these days is very powerful, isn't it? Because a lot of, a lot of it is decisions about what do we do with our resources. How much of our resources or do we use to do harm? To kill? To do violence? And again, we have to remember, you know, as we know in our modern culture, violence is like an omnipresent, pervasive fact, isn't it, of modern life? Killings, shootings, violence, even, you know, especially like violence among family members, or between parents and children, or, you know what I mean? Violence among kids. Right. You know? Shootings, stabbings, right? Just part of everyday news. But we forget that this means one human being is harming another human being, right? So, this is very powerful. Let me open this up, you know. Any responses? Aware of the suffering caused by the destruction of life, I am committed to cultivating compassion and learning ways to protect the lives of people, animals, plants, and minerals. I am determined not to kill, not to let others kill, not to support any act of killing in the world, in my thinking and in my way of life. Wasn't that one of God's initial commandments? Any biblical scholars here? What did God say to Moses? What was the first commandment? Anybody remember their Bible? What? Thou shalt not kill. That was over 5,000 years ago. Right out there in the desert somewhere. Thou shalt not kill. And here we are 5,000 years later. It's like, anyhow, comments, questions. Yeah, this is not easy, especially because we're in the midst of a world that, you know, killing and taking life is very easy. For nations, for individuals, for groups. Any reflections? Upstairs, anybody?
Not yet.
It's a little heavy on a Sunday morning, but this is the first training. And, yeah, this way. Do we have a... And it's not easy.
Yeah, I'm wondering what advice you give on how to skillfully and compassionately respond to people who defend, say, what's happening in Gaza right now. What do you do, and how do you respond to that? And many of these people are people who you would otherwise think are very, you know, moral and good people, and yet they are defending something horrific.
Yeah. So, but again, this This is not new, is it? This is not new. It's the news, but this is not new. Human beings have been killing each other in this way, right? Forever. Isn't that true? Yeah. The problem is that we respond case by case. And so therefore it never ends. Because it really begins here. Right? It begins here. Because, you know, the same people who will support the killing of people that they think are worth killing, when their people are attacked or killed, will say just the opposite. Right? So this is our challenge. You see, this is why I think that Thich Nhat Hanh, another great religious teacher, you know, and I include people like the Pope. I mean, we still have some moral compasses in this world, right? It's for a future to be possible, there has to be a transformation in consciousness. Because the problem, Rex, you know, we could talk about the politics of this situation, but people have always done this. People will always justify killing. Right? People will always justify invasion. People have always done it. I mean, you know, this goes back to Neolithic times. So we have, you know, so this is the world we live in, and it just keeps unfolding. So to me, this is, you know, this is where it begins. Because the killing may stop, right? After it always stops, you know. You know, the thirst for blood comes to an end. The need for revenge comes to an end. You know, the political, social objective has been achieved, right? And then what? Right? And then what? Yeah, why will it? I mean, remember World War I? What was World War I called? The war to end all wars. Right? World War II was the war to destroy fascism. Right? Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, you see, it goes on and on. Because we never get at the heart of thing, which is what? Human beings. And that's why, you know, it's not as immediate. And again, I'm not saying that if one has, as an individual or part of a group of individuals, the capacity to end violence, protect life in any way, please do it, right? Please do it. But if we really want to end it, then it has to be a change in human beings. And traditionally, that has been the role of religion and spirituality to you know, not politics. That's really been the role of religion to awaken human beings to a higher level of humanity, right? And one of the basis of that is, did anybody ever hear the expression, am I my brother's keeper? I mean, that's not recent, is it? Ancient. Am I my brother's keeper? What a strange idea. Am I responsible for my brother or sister? Right? If I don't feel any connection, this is why, like in Buddhist teachings, you know, it's all about interbeing, interconnection. We're all in this together. We're all the same. If people don't have that view, if people are disconnected, if people feel their islands just unto themselves, or they only, you know, we're living in a time of things are becoming very tribal, you know, like tribal, you know, like everybody's kind of identifies with their group. You know, it's... But this makes us hopeful because it brings us back to me. You know, what do I want to stand for? What are my values? How do I want to manifest in the world? That's what these ethics are about. Yeah. Yeah, so Rex, if you have the possibility, you know, first step is always to listen. You know, we have to listen. But or else you're just throwing ideas, you know. It's anybody ever try to, yeah, you can't do that, right? Listen. Listen to their suffering. Yeah. Listen to their suffering. Try to understand the roots of their anger. We have to connect with each other. We have to listen to each other, even though it's not easy. Right? Yeah, wouldn't it be wonderful if the Israelis and the Palestinians could what? Talk together, share their suffering, listen to each other. They're like, nobody thinks of that, do they? Because we live in a time where violence and harm is so acceptable as a response. But again, let's come back to us, to each of us. You know, our own hearts, our own minds. Right? Have we given up doing harm? You know, these five trainings, this is about life and destruction of life. The second one is about not taking what is not given. It's really the opposite. It's really about generosity. The third is about sexual misconduct, all the harm that people can do to each other and children and adults. The fourth one is about speech. And the fifth one is about consumption patterns and intoxicants. I mean, this stuff is ancient. But really, if you read these, you get, wow, yeah, this is the root of the social problems. I mean, is violence a problem in our society? If you look on our, oh, yeah. Right. Angie and I were just up in New York City. Crime, what's everybody concerned about? High up, what? Crime, what's crime? Violence, stealing, right? Ancient. Yeah. Communication, loving speech, constructive speech. I mean, our national leaders, you listen to a lot of the content of their speech, the way they talk. Would you call it a strong intention not to do harm? No. No. Don't even care. Yeah. Yeah. So this is not easy. Thank you, Rex. This is not easy. Any other questions or thoughts?
Chris Sidwell online says.
Yes. What does he say?
Isn't the only way we can change the world is by changing ourselves first, then to lead by example?
I would say, yes and no. So when we change ourselves, we are changing the world. You know, each of us is 1/8 billionth of the world, okay? So quantitatively, when we do change ourselves, we are changing the world. So that is true. And, you know, transforming ourselves, our hearts and minds. And again, since all of us, you know, interact with others, through families, through relationships, through work, through other ways, participating in social discourse and all that. You know, we all have ways of affecting, you know, the discourse that's going on or the effects not going on. I mean, there are many ways that we can do that by responding to things differently. So, yes, the one place we can all begin is with ourselves, right? Because that can never be taken away from us, right? Because each of us ultimately is responsible for the actions of our body, speech, and mind, and we can make a decision no longer to do harm and to do everything we can. But yet, you know, we are interconnected and we are involved with society, and we still can vote, and we still can, you know, do all the things that we can do to influence, you know, things at various levels, local levels, national, state levels. And so I think it's important to do that too. And everybody's going to decide how they want to do that. Because we're on this boat together. And so, I think it's important that we bring our good hearts into the world and our good ideas into the world and our good values in our world, and not be afraid to speak up in a skillful way. Anybody else? Yes. If anybody totally disagrees with me, that's fine too.
I think I struggle with this one the most because I feel personally hypocritical when, with my actions, when I eat meat, support pro-choice, don't necessarily feel that bad when somebody gets put to death that did terrible things. And so, like, personally, I feel just like, oh, could I ever take the precepts if I don't? Could I ever take the precepts if I do these things, feel this way? I mean, the other ones I don't struggle with as much, but I feel like I have a good heart, but I guess I just struggle more personally with these types of actions and feelings.
That makes me very happy, because we should struggle. And again, I mean, in terms of your bigger question about, you know, if I'm not perfect, can I take the trainings? That's why we take them, you see. if you were perfect, you wouldn't have to take them. And that's again why Thich Nhat Hanh called them trainings. There's something you want to train in, you know. I mean, there's a training here about intoxicants, and, you know, and some people say, well, I still drink wine, or I still do this. That means I can't take them. You know, I would say, yeah, you take them, because you're now going to, and we'll talk about that, you know, you're now going to bring mindfulness to what you're doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, the best ethics or morality are ones that come from the inside out, which is very much Buddhistic. It comes from the inside out. You know, they're called, that's why Thay called them mindfulness trainings as opposed to precepts or commandments that are imposed. You know, at the end of the day, you know, they're mirrors. So like you're saying, yeah, I read the mirror, you know, about like these precepts. You know, it's like, again, you know, we look in the mirror. Oh, that's what I look like, right? You know, and you go, got to comb my hair or something. Or, did you see what I'm saying? So don't be, don't be afraid to be uncomfortable. Again, the trainings are mirrors to help us look at ourselves. And so you just, you know, so to me it's good. You know, you're struggling, and so I'd say, you know, but bring mindfulness to that. You know, kind of stop and go, well, that's interesting. You know, to like just have a conversation with yourself. You know, well, that's interesting, because part of me really feels like this is what I should be doing, or this is the right way to be. And then obviously there's another part of me that doesn't. And rather than just kind of leaving it there, it's like, you know, well, you know, let me look into that. Yeah, isn't that interesting? Yeah, when I hear that somebody who I think is a bad person had just gotten it, yeah, they deserved it, right? You see, anybody ever feel that way? I mean, it's kind of natural. But there's a way around that. You see, you know, we're kind of learning a different way how to view things. So let's say that person who just did what they did, and you heard about that they got it, and you go, yeah, they deserved it. Let's say that person was your brother. Was your brother who you had grown up with? Would you have the same, I mean, would it be a little different, you see? Right? It's interesting. You see, as soon as we kind of acknowledge connection, right? And I mean, think about your family and friends. Everybody have family and friends? Are they all saints? What? No. Mitch laughed immediately. They're not all saints. Have any of them ever done anything which you might consider less than laudable? Has any of them maybe done things or said things or acted in a way that maybe were really sort of terrible? All right. But Mitch is a good guy. He goes, yeah, but he's my brother. I don't know your brother, you know. And, you know, he had a rough childhood or something. You know what I mean? We extend understanding, don't we, to people we care about, even if they're really rotten people. Anybody know anybody like that? Yeah. But, you know, they mean well, right? Or something must have happened to them, you know? When they were children, they weren't like that. You see, we extend understanding. Isn't that funny, right? And yet, they're doing something that is the same as this other person. So that's interesting to me. You see, we have that capacity. You know, and that capacity really comes down to they're a human being just like me, and they're the product of their causes and conditions. You know, it's very central in Buddhist teachings on karma that we understand that everyone is the product of causes and conditions. So just close your eyes a second and pick the political person, I was about to say that you hate the most. Pick the political person that just drives you up a wall. All right? Okay. Close your eyes and just pick that person. Let all your animosity and all your judgment and all your ill will toward this person. Everybody got it? All right. Now try this out. Imagine that you were born to that person's, his or her parents. And every experience that that person had, you had. You grew up in their family, you had all the experiences they had, you had, you know, all the values, everything, you know, you had it 100%, just like they did. This could be hard for some of us. And so if you had grown up having the same exact experience moment to moment that this person had, would you be any different than they are today? And I know you'd like to say yes, but the truth is no. Now, it doesn't mean that you give them a free pass in life, right? But it means you understand that they are the product of their causes and conditions. They cannot help but being who they are at this moment. You know, and you can do everything you can to oppose them and everything else, but we don't hate them, because we understand they're the product of their causes and conditions. They cannot help being who they are. That takes that whole personal thing out of it. Yeah. And then you can just, you know, extend that to the world. You know, why is the world the way it is? Because of all these causes and conditions. You know, why are the Israelis and the Palestinians going at it like they are? Causes and conditions. Causes and conditions. When causes and conditions change, things can change. But until that happens, things just keep unfolding, don't they? That's sort of a way to look at things. Any other questions or comments? Aware of the suffering caused by the destruction of life, I'm committed to cultivating compassion and learning ways to protect the lives of people, animals, plants, and minerals. I am determined not to kill, not to let others kill, and not to support any act of killing in the world, in my thinking and in my way of life.
There are two online.
Yes.
First is from Bill and Vicky.
Mm-hmm.
They ask, in 2,600 years, is the approach having an impact?
You know, I don't know if I could speak to that. You know, it's interesting. When I was living with the Tibetans in an area that had a large monastery and all that, and if you know anything about Tibetan Buddhism and Tibetan monastics, they spend a lot of time doing what they call pujas or rituals. I mean, and these things go on morning till night for 5 days, for 7 days. So they have a whole ritual calendar, which they spend a lot of their life doing. And so I once asked a teacher, I said, you know, what's that? I'm an American, I can ask anything. I said, you know, like, what's that all about? You know, like, you know, I mean, like, beside the ritual and all, you know, and they're blowing horns and they're saying prayers and they're burning incense. I mean, it's just, it's a whole production. Well, he says, you know, it was very interesting to what he said to me. He said, well, you know, we're basically, it's like we're generating this positive energy. We're putting this positive energy out there into the world. And I said, well, is it having any effect? And he said, yes, it does have an effect. I said, well, can you give me an example? He said, all of a sudden, you know, like we could be sitting here and all of a sudden a kind thought comes into your head. He said, that's because of that, right? Or all of a sudden you're thinking, I really want to tell that person what I think of him, but all of a sudden you think, no, that would not be kind. He said, that's because of that, you see. So it was interesting. He said, you know, the problem is people have their karma that is strong. So all this does is kind of, it puts that good energy into the mix. It was just very interesting the way he saw it, you know, like, yeah, like so some people think, yeah, maybe we should stop killing. He said, that's because of the, that's because of these ceremonies. So I thought that was very interesting. I don't know if that's the answer you were thinking, but yeah, it's like, it's just a constant, you know, And until people, you know about Ashoka, you know, there was this great king Ashoka, I think it was two millennia or two centuries maybe, one after the Buddha's passing. He was a great, he was the head of the Mauryan Empire, Ashoka. He was a great warrior king, right? Conquered, you know. And one day, after a great victory over the Kalingas, he was in his royal carriage and, you know, going out onto the battlefield, surveying the conquest. And he saw death and destruction everywhere. It so touched him when he saw what he had done and where it led. He basically decided to change. He embraced Buddhism. He became this great emperor. You know, the Ashokan Empire is like one of the high points of Indian, you know, of that world. I mean, he just did all kinds of wonderful things. And actually, the one of the symbols of Buddhism is the Dharma wheel. That wheel was taken from the chariot of a warrior's chariot, the wheel. See, it used to be a symbol of conquest. And he made it the symbol of Dharma, of a different kind of conquest. So, possibility, Ashoka. Any other?
Yes, Carlos says, how about not taking part in political matters, not subscribing to any party? Would it not be a support for no killing?
I don't want to tell people what to do. You know, when I enter the political social realm, my view is always, you know, is there anybody out there that still seems to have a humanistic mind? Right? Is there anybody out there who really wants to end human suffering and not contribute to it? I'm always hopeful. But I mean, if you're asking me, I don't make my decisions based on political parties or anything. I mean, I think that's a sideshow. I mean, it's like, you know, are there policies that are really facilitating good things in this life for human beings? And are there ones that are really harmful? You know, see, it's very simple, isn't it? But the stance is ethical, right? And I think this whole political thing is a sideshow. I hate to say that. I think it really, because we lose our moral compass. Yes. Over here, somebody has a...
This discussion brings to mind a story that I read once about a fellow in our modern age, and we'll call the city Oakland, California, where there was a neighborhood that, under circumstances that I don't recall, he moved into such a not so attractive neighborhood. Mm-hmm. There was, his neighbors were afraid because there were gangs surrounding mm-hmm. them and violence and crime happening. But he was aware that he didn't want to be afraid mm-hmm. and constantly wondered what he could do to change things. But one day it occurred to him that he would just put a Buddha out on the sidewalk. And it was there for a while, but then people started to bring offerings, flowers, fruit, prayers that they had written down and could put near the Buddha. That facilitated a change in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So it was just an idea this fellow had, and yet over time, the whole neighborhood changed. So it's like you don't really have to argue with anybody. You don't have to point out their shortcomings.
No.
But you can act in a way that maybe, you know, this was a demonstrable action. Mm. This fellow put a Buddha out there, but it, you know, give it some room, and something might occur to each of us that we can plant a seed of kindness somewhere, and let it may not affect that person that you had that conversation with that you didn't know how to respond, but it's down the line, it will plant a seed that will grow in kindness.
Yeah, so we don't know. The bottom line is we don't know, right? I mean, somebody could have put a Buddha out there and it disappeared the next day. Right? But you could say to yourself, well, I hope whoever took it is doing well with it, you know? So at the end of the day, all we have control over is our minds, right? So, you know, our intention is always to do good. Our intention is always that we hope that whatever our actions is, they are going to, you know, do good and not do harm. I mean, sometimes we can think we're doing good, and sometimes we may find that, it didn't really work out too well. But again, the important thing is our intention, that we have control over. Yeah, so again, if you're interested in transmission of the five trainings and the three, I think there is information on the website, Dan, right? We have a section, yeah. So over these coming weeks, we will talk more about them, and there's a class, but if you're interested, and again, to sign up doesn't mean you have to do it. No. But I just wanted to let you know it's coming up among a lot of other things coming up. Good. So on that note, thank you for coming. Please, those who are here, stay for tea. There's tea? Downstairs is tea. There'll be tea online. You'll say more about it.